So anyway, enough of all that stuff. For those of you that haven't joined us before, we're MPM Legal. We're a firm of employment lawyers and business immigration. And we're coming to you today to talk about some family-friendly rights. Now, obviously, this is a topic that might normally require about 3 weeks' worth of training. So we thought what we would do is, as always, we try to distill down sort of some of the key questions that we often get asked by clients. So first of all, morning, Verity.
Morning.
So quick overview. I mean, I don't know about you, but years ago when people used to say, oh, can you draft me some family friendly policies to go in your handbook? You'd probably do a maternity leave policy, paternity leave and maybe parental leave. Now we've got maternity leave, which, as everybody knows, is up to a year on maternity leave. We've got paternity leave, which remains at the 1 or 2 weeks leave paid at the statutory rate. We've got adoption leave, which is similar to maternity leave and can be taken by either parent, same-sex parents, etc. Then we've got the delightful shared parental leave. And for those of you that have ever tried to write a shared parental leave policy, we feel your pain because it's an absolute nightmare. And it's just so many statutory bits and pieces in there. It's actually really difficult to write so that it's meaningful in English. But anyway, as you know, shared parental leave, the aim is to do exactly what it says on the tin, to share the leave that you can take after the birth or adoption of a child and split it and share it between both parents. Then confusingly, we've still got parental leave, not shared parental leave, which is the up to 4 weeks unpaid leave per year. We've then got things like the emergency time off for dependents, and we've got flexible working. So there's a whole plethora of family-friendly rights, which are largely set down in statute. So in terms of the key questions that we often get asked, we've come up with a few, but obviously share it in the Q&A function below and we'll try to keep our eyes on what comes up in that Q&A function and answer as we go along. So kicking off with some of our key topics, one of the things I often get asked, Verity, I don't know if you do too, is why do we still have this difference between ordinary maternity leave with OML and additional maternity leave? I mean, I know there used to be differences before about what parts of the contract survived, but that's largely been aligned. But that's a question we get asked.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I don't think people really differentiate anymore between the two of them. It's only if it ever comes up, and I have to be honest, it's really rare that somebody, that a lady will raise it about her job, because obviously with additional maternity leave, you don't return to the same job, it's a similar job, but it's few and far between, and I don't really know why we even bother with it, if I'm honest with you.
I think that's it, isn't it? The only difference is on really rights to return. So just in case people don't know, when you're on ordinary maternity leave, if you return to work before the end of it or at the end of OML, you've got the right to return to the same job, obviously, unless there's a redundancy situation. But with additional maternity leave, it basically, as an employer, you've got a bit more flexibility, so that if it's not, I mean, what the law says is this lovely phrase, if it's not reasonably practicable for the person to return to their previous job, i.e. the business has moved on, structure's changed, etc., then they have the right to return to a similar job. Now, that's similar, isn't it, in terms of status, grade, place of work, etc., all the usual stuff.
Yeah, I think in reality, though, if that situation was ever going to occur, I would hope that an employer would talk to the lady before she returns, or before it gets to that stage, so they can make her aware in case she wants to bring forward her maternity leave and come back to the same job.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's such a rare situation that it would actually happen. In reality.
And normally when it does come up, there's bigger things going on, isn't there? There's bigger issues.
Like we're going to talk about next. That's really when we get a whole host of questions. And I do think most of our clients are actually very clued up on what to do, but I just feel that they feel nervous around doing the right thing. I think that's what it is, really, because you want to do the right thing. And sometimes, you know, situations occur that you just can't help. Yeah. And it is, isn't it, talking to someone on maternity leave about their job being changed? You know, it's not nice.
Yeah. But let's come on to that then. So changes during maternity leave. And in particular, there's always the issue about what happens in a redundancy situation. Mm-hmm. You know, for those of you that have worked with us before, we've probably talked to you a lot about what we call a Regulation 10 scenario. So that scenario is basically where you might have, well, let's use an example. Okay, so say for example you've got 5 members of a team, you want to streamline the team, you want to go from 5 to 3, and therefore you're into a redundancy situation. And then it's like, right, okay, so one of the people in the team is on maternity leave. How do we approach that? I'm kicking this one right over to you, Verity. I've noticed here I'm asking you the questions and and letting you give the answers.
Talking to you. Don't be talking to you.
Tell me how you would deal with that situation.
Oh, God. I mean, that's your very, very typical scenario. And funnily enough, I have something very similar last year, but I'll add another layer to it in a minute. But yes, if you are reducing down simply 5 to 3, there is a job available for the lady, probably identical to what she's doing. That's a Regulation 10 situation. You would be obliged to offer her that role. The difference is, and I'll bounce it back to you, Adrian, is if you weren't going to do just a simple reduction, but you were actually going to restructure, create new roles, what would the obligation be then?
Again, I think it's very similar. So if you're going from 5 to 3, I would argue that in actual fact there's the right for the lady to come back to her existing job, because it still exists. You just need fewer of them. But in a situation where that job is perhaps disappearing, and you know, you're looking at restructuring, reshaping, and you're creating new roles, this is where Regulation 10 would bite again. And what Regulation 10 basically says is that any woman on maternity leave has the right to have priority over any suitable alternative roles. Mm. So, you know, that can be really irritating when you're trying to manage it. Say, for example, you've got somebody in the team who is frankly better, and you would prefer to keep them in the role. Your hands are certainly somewhat tied because of this Regulation 10. But it's not as straightforward as that, because you've then got to dig into, right, well, okay, is the role that is the alternative, is it a suitable alternative? And suitability again comes back down to skills, experience, qualifications, location, exactly. Location can be quite a big thing. Hours of work, for example. So, you know, this is the kind of thing that's got legs, hasn't it? And tentacles, because it can go to what happens if they make a flexible working request.
Clients get a bit stuck, I think, because they think, well, if we change it enough, will the role still be suitable? You know, and that is where a lot of the ambiguity comes, I think.
Or maybe there are two roles. There might be two roles.
But like you say, you know, you could have somebody, if it's a full-time role, don't forget they still have the opportunity to put in a flexible working request to say, well, can we reduce the hours, or perhaps could I job share?
Exactly. So it's a bit of a two-stage process, that one. But I mean, I've had it before where an employer's restructuring the team and they've got two roles and they want to give one role to somebody and they want to give the other role to the person returning on maternity leave. And the woman on maternity leave says, well, I don't want that role, I want the other role, and that other role is the suitable alternative. But in that situation, as long as you are offering a suitable alternative, there is no harm in you saying, well, actually, we think that's a suitable alternative and we'd like to offer that to you. Doesn't necessarily mean that you get away scot-free, because of course then, you know, there's other claims that the lady on maternity leave could bring. She could say, well, if you're not going to give me the opportunity to apply for that one, then that's potentially maternity discrimination and all manner of stuff of that nature. So it's definitely something to plan through quite carefully, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And don't forget that a lot of women tend to tag on holiday or paternity leave and things like that at the end of their maternity leave. So technically work out whether or not Regulation 10 is actually going to take effect.
That's a really good point, actually. And I don't know whether any of you have read this, but there has been a government consultation on the application of this priority under Regulation 10, because at the moment it only applies until such time as maternity leave is finished. So literally, maternity leave comes to an end, the employee returns, bang, generally they're out of protection. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I have advised clients in the past to leave it a couple of weeks mm-hmm. and wait till they've returned and then go through the process, because that mm-hmm. way that protection isn't available. The government consultation is trying to introduce an extension to that, I think, to cover for a period of up to 6 months after maternity leave. But as it stands at the moment, that's not in force. Verity, your point is an important one. So, you know, if an employee says, well, I want to take some of my accrued holiday at the end of my maternity leave, in your head and in the mind of the business, that might mean technically you still think they're on maternity leave, but they're not. Technically, they've returned to work, but are on holiday. So yeah, absolutely, that's a cracking point.
The other one beforehand, because I've had it before, where people seem to think that there's some sort of protection during pregnancy, and actually there isn't. You just have to be careful about pregnancy discrimination so that you're not selecting them for redundancy on the grounds of the fact that they are pregnant, or that may have swayed your thinking. But in terms of any additional protection like Regulation 10, there isn't.
And it's tricky because, you know, you might be in a situation where you're restructuring during maternity leave and the employee's still going to be off on leave for a number of months. You know, are you still obliged to offer them that suitable alternative? Well, yes, you are. But of course, they're not going to be around to do the job for a few months. So that creates even more difficulties because you have to think about maternity cover for that role.
That's the other thing as well. I think we talked about this yesterday when we were chatting about this. Maternity cover, I get a lot of questions about the cover and whether or not they can apply for new roles that are coming up in a redundancy and a restructure and where they sit. Because often, and let's be honest, if you do get a replacement who sometimes is better than the lady who's gone off maternity leave, can create a difficult situation. But just be very careful in how you address that situation and the Regulation 10 requirements. It is a tricky area, so if anybody doesn't have any questions, you know, just drop them in the chat function or the question function now, and we can take a look at them. Because it is very fact sensitive, so whilst we've given you the headline terms, it is very, very dependent on what the situation is.
I was reading something else about this as well, and sometimes you have a situation where you might end up with two people who are both on maternity leave, and of course both get priority, and there isn't a straightforward answer on that. I know there's not a straightforward answer on that. So they both get priority, but there's only one role, so how the hell does that work? You know, looking at it, it was a case of, well, do you have to then sort of go back to some kind of selection process? And, you know, you're entitled to look at the performance of the employees. I don't think there's a clear answer on that. The law isn't clear on it. I'm not sure that there hasn't been any definitive case law on it. But again, I think in that situation, that's definitely one to seek advice on in the event that it comes up. In the same way, just completely going off at a tangent, where sometimes you might have a flexible working request into a department where you've already got a number of part-timers and it can't hold. Exactly, it can't support
part-timers. It's minefield. You know, I have to be honest, flexible working is very, very tricky, because often you will get managers who are just adamant that they're not having flexible working, but you do have to genuinely consider it and look at all the options. You know, really what Adrian and I've just said about job sharing. Could you job share? Could you, you know, reduce the hours? Could you change the hours in a different way? You know, try and find a compromise. I think sometimes saying no in the first instance is actually probably not going to be productive. See if you can try and reach compromise, you know, find a way around it. And sometimes you can't.
But it's about having the evidence to support why you've got to the conclusion that you can't, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. So we've had one lady say, Rachel say, she's had every situation we've described. So, yeah, that's quite funny. Another lady, I've had a lady whose employment was allowed to be transferred to the UK from France. She's now pregnant in the UK and sick. She's requested to move back to France. We are likely to make her role redundant as we have some tasks. Have already been transferred to India, but no consultation with her. That's very tricky because of the fact that there's a dual jurisdiction there. I would also be seeking to get advice locally in France if she's working in France, in terms of what her maternity rights are. But in terms of her job, it really depends who is her employer. So if it's still UK based, because it will all still be UK law if she's working, she might be working in France, albeit that she's you know, based in France.
Yeah, I think the fact that she's gone back to France for her maternity leave is you know, if she's just gone back to you know, spend her maternity leave there, that's fine. You're right still to get the French advice, but in terms of our obligation as employer, it doesn't fundamentally impact on the fact that we're still under an obligation to consult with her over what looks to be a redundancy situation, or possibly even a cheapy outsourcing. So there's a whole raft of issues going on there. I mean, I think that brings us on to quite an interesting question, and we often get asked this as well. So, you know, if, for example, there's a redundancy situation that comes up during maternity leave, do you go through redundancy consultation with them during maternity leave, or do you wait to the end? I mean, and I'm thinking in this situation, they might be the only person affected. Obviously, if it's a situation where there's a selection process and it's the example I gave earlier, where you go from 5 to 3, then you've got to do the consultation at the time. But if it's a case of, well, we don't think we're going to need her role for when she comes back, there's the decision to be made whether you consult during maternity leave or, as I say, towards the end. And I've got a sort of a couple of thoughts on that. Be interested in yours as well, Verity. So very often I'll say, well, is yours the type of business where something might come up in the next few months? So, you know, if you were to consult on redundancy now, there may not be an alternative role. Or is it a case of, well, we know for sure there isn't going to be an alternative role, in which case, you know, you can consult with somebody on maternity leave. If, however, as I say, you kind of, it's a movable business and something might happen in the next few months as a bit of uncertainty, that might then inform your decision making that you're going to start any redundancy consultation towards the end of maternity leave. So you've got the opportunity to talk about an alternative if there is one. So, but, you know, ultimately that's kind of your choice. But there are a couple of practical things to think about. First of all, you don't get out of the obligation to pay your maternity pay. So as soon as they've reached a certain trigger point, you have to pay out the remainder of their maternity pay. And I would also argue that if you offer anything enhanced by way of your maternity pay, then you're probably under an obligation to pay that as well. The second thing as well is I think if there isn't going to be an alternative role, there's no opening, there's no vacancy. If I were in the person on maternity leave shoes, I would want to know that sooner rather than later, because the amount of planning on childcare, nursery places, etc., that begins quite early on in maternity leave. And you don't really want to find that, you know, in the first week back, the employees jump through all those hoops to put everything in place, only to find that you start the conversation about redundancy. I think I would find that really irritating. So those are the types of things to bear in mind for that.
Okay. And I think also, which often sometimes gets slipped through the net, is that people will talk, and often people will then find out. And what you don't want to happen is her to find out through somebody that's not from senior management. Yeah. That's the worst situation. I've had that a few times.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, look, cool. Redundancy and maternity, basically a whole barrel of nightmare, seek advice. and we're right here if you need us, because every situation is fact sensitive. Every employer is different. Every employee is different. What about bonuses? That's the other one I get asked a lot. Do we have to pay a bonus when somebody's on maternity leave? And if so, what and how and when?
Yeah, this always comes up.
Yeah.
There's a difference, isn't there, between a individual performance related one. So always work out whether it's an individual performance related one specific to the lady, or whether or not it's a company-wide one.
Because it's still pay, isn't it? So you know and it still counts as pay, and under the maternity regs you don't have to pay during maternity leave. So to that extent, you know, most of the time, but there are sort of wrinkles around the edges there, aren't there, in terms of prorating it. So I mean, I think one of the things to remember is, if, well, generally there isn't really a requirement to pay a bonus during maternity leave for the period of time spent on leave. So, you know, you could prorate something, but remember that the 2 weeks compulsory leave that the employee has to take at the very start of maternity leave, that counts towards, if you like, working time for the purposes of a bonus. So if you are prorating it, you've got to discount that 2 weeks when you think about it.
Yeah. The other thing that comes up often is like a Christmas bonus. So say someone's on maternity leave and the company give a Christmas bonus, or perhaps they might give an additional holiday day or something. Like discretionary. Might come up. And I'm going to be honest, it's pretty unclear as to whether or not you would give it. I think most employers tend to do it just in case, because it's the odd day.
Yeah. The same with the Christmas bonus as well. I mean, I think technically speaking, you'd look at a Christmas bonus and you'd say, okay, if you were applying the current position under case law, you would say, well, we don't have to pay you a Christmas bonus for the amount of time, for the whole amount based on you being off work on maternity leave, apart from obviously the 2 weeks I've just talked about. But you should be prorating it for the amount of time they were at work, unless they've been off for the whole year. But I think most employers probably take a bit of a view on that, because Christmas bonus payable to all staff is not likely to be, a huge amount of money, and therefore they'd probably just pay it to their to the employees anyway. But it is quite a tricky area. But the prorating aspect is, I think, really important to remember.
Yeah, definitely. So what about other things? We often get asked about pensions, car allowance, childcare vouchers.
So let's go with car allowance first of all, because car allowance, the basic rule is you've generally got to keep benefits going during maternity leave apart from pay. Car allowance is one of those really tricky ones, because essentially it's cash. And so there are two schools of thought. Is it a benefit? Or is it pay? Is it just an extra sum of money that lands in the pay slip each month? And I think there are actually conflicting views on this. And I think, to be honest, the advice I've given over the years depends on whether I'm acting from an employee or whether I'm acting for an employer. If I'm acting for an employee, I'd argue it's a benefit. And it's a benefit in order. It's like a substitute for a car, which would definitely be a benefit. And therefore, it should continue during maternity leave. And I have been successful during that argument. If I'm acting for an employer, I think I have tried to argue that actually it counts as cash, and because it's paid as pay, it goes into cash. I think I lean towards it more being a benefit, however, because it's not normally pensionable, for example, and therefore it's separated from pay. But Verity, I'd be interested to see what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm honest with you, most clients I've ever worked for tend to just give it because it is so grey and they don't really want to risk it.
Yeah.
Similarly with childcare vouchers as well, it's very grey area. They tend to be paid as well.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah.
And pension contributions, employer contribution obviously still continues, but not the employee, because there's no pay to deduct it from.
But again, it's about giving the employee the chance. So employer contributions, absolutely stay based on the pay that they would have received. But for the employee contributions, I know many clients basically say to employees, if you want to carry on making contributions, then we'll have to talk about how that can happen, to essentially to top up any shortfall. But just to be clear, the employer pension contributions do continue.
Yeah. Okay. And shared parental leave. Oh my goodness, should we even dare talk about it?
Well, I just think it's kind of off the moment. So something that has come up quite a lot is in a situation where historically employers have an enhanced maternity pay policy in place. Say, for example, they pay 3 months full pay, 3 months half pay, for example. And then the question has been, are we obliged to offer the same type of enhancement for shared parental leave? Now, if we remember, in order to have shared parental leave, the woman has to end her maternity leave early, so that will stop. So, I suppose the question to the employer is, what is the incentive for somebody to return to work early to take advantage of the shared parental leave? And it's about thinking about what type of business you are, because if we're talking about equality, why would you not offer the same benefit across the board? I mean, always the difficulty is, you know, you're probably most likely to have the two parents employed at different companies, so one might have a greater benefit level than others. But I think the statutory position now, or rather the case law position, is that there isn't an obligation to offer like benefits. So, you know, if you are in a situation where you've got enhanced maternity pay and you don't have enhanced shared parental leave, as it stands at the moment, that's legally fine. But as I say, you've got to come back and think about what message you're trying to send out to your organisation by, you know, in terms of equality. Do you agree with that, Verity, or am I completely wrong?
No, I agree with you.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness for two reasons. One, we both work for the same firm. And two, I'm glad I'm not wrong.
Yeah, I just think you have to think about it fairly, really. So, yeah. That's my advice. Is I agree with you. One quick question before we finish. We might have to do this together, Adrian. But Suzanne has said, dare I ask, mention Alabaster. So this was a case years ago about pay rises during maternity pay.
And if I'm correct,
and correct me if I'm wrong, if you get a pay, there's a qualifying period to calculate your maternity pay.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly when it is. I think it's like week 15 to 15th, week 25.
Yeah.
So there's two pay dates that you have to calculate. There is a very handy calculation on the government website. But if you get a pay rise during that period, your pay should be calculated on that rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a pay rise during your maternity leave, then you need to have your pay recalculated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So in other words, this is where...
In other words, get pay rise, you need your maternity pay recalculated.
Yeah, but it's only going to be relevant, isn't it, really, if you've either got an enhanced maternity pay policy or you're still in that first 6 weeks. Okay, so it's absolutely right. If at normal pay review time, the employee would have got a pay review, but for the fact that she's on maternity leave, you do need to look at that. You do need to apply the pay rise. Then it's a question of then looking at whether or not this impacts on the maternity pay that you're paying. If, you know, if they're still within that 6 week period where they get 90% of their pay, then you would have to make sure it's 90% of the increased salary.
Yes.
And at that time, obviously, if they're on the lower rate of statutory maternity pay, which, as we all know, is a handful of buttons per week that might buy you a loaf of bread and a pint of milk, then it's obviously not going to have any impact. Again, unless you've got an enhanced policy. So, yeah, that's the rule of thumb on that. The other question, just on calculation of maternity pay, which has caused certain amount of consternation, shall we say, in the past for clients, is if an employee gets a bonus during that calculation period before they go on leave. So, you know, if your employee times it sweetly, they'll get that pay. They might get a hefty bonus during that pay calculation period. And you have to take that into consideration when you then calculate.
They still do.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you could get a nice juicy bonus and your statutory maternity pay and any enhanced pay would be, well, actually, it's a question about enhanced pay. I'm just going to stick with statutory pay would be based on on what was actually earned. Yeah. Well, what about enhanced then?
I don't know. Your reference period is in your...
Yeah, it depends what it says in your policy. Yeah. That's a question, isn't it? So does your policy say that you'll get, you know, that you'll pay statutory pay and then it will be enhanced up to your basic salary for a period of time? There's a question to look at. Going completely off the tangent there.
Yeah.
I think that's that was all the questions that we had.
That was a little stop tour of family friendly rights.
Yeah, so apologies if we've rather galloped through that, and I'm largely left with the feeling that I'm not sure whether we've clarified issues for you so much as probably scared the hell out of everybody by raising these issues and scaring you. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really important just to be aware that these are the types of wrinkles on top of all the other wrinkles that occur around these issues. Yeah. So hopefully that has been super helpful. We're out of time for today, but if you do have any queries, obviously just ping us an email, drop us a message through LinkedIn. What's up next week, Verity? Can you remember?
I'm not sure what the plan is for next week, because we did think whether or not we needed another family friendly, but I don't think we do. So watch this space, it could be something completely different. But yeah, we are
the we'll end. Surprise you.
We are coming to the end of it all soon, so this first series is coming to an end. So I hope you all enjoyed it. If you do have anything that we've missed, or you'd love us to cover something else in the next sessions, please just drop us a line. You know, we take on board everyone's feedback, and we love hearing from you. So yeah, have a lovely rest of the week. The sun shines out and it's going to be glorious.
Thank you very much, everybody, for attending today, and hope to see you soon.
Yeah, bye everybody.
Bye.